The LOI Pod on Off The Ball. Catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off The Ball all season.
Yes, hello and welcome to the LOI Pod on Off The Ball. Stephen Doyle here with you this week. And after breaking our commentary coverage last weekend, no highlights to listen back to this week. But I am glad to say, I want to confirm, in fact, that the League of Ireland Pod is going live at the All Together Now Festival, which is on the weekend after next. So it's coming up quick. Kneecap, Pulp and Vinnie Perth sharing a bill. Who'll have thunk it? We'll be in the Go Loud Lounge from around 6 o'clock on Sunday evening of the festival. And I'm glad to announce that myself and Vinnie will be joined by Brian Kerr on the night. So it's going to be great to have the great man Brian Kerr there alongside us. 6 o'clock on Sunday week in the Go Loud Lounge, the LOI Pod going live at All Together Now. Really looking forward to it. So Vinnie Perth is with me this week, and we have a super sub as well alongside us, Gareth McLean, unavailable. So we've got the great Keith Tracy here in studio. Good to have you, Keith.
Super sub and great. I don't think I've ever heard those words put together to describe me, but I'll definitely take it. I'm great, lads. How are we?
All good, all good. Vinnie, how are you doing?
I'm good. It's great being in. I hadn't known Keith was torn up, but I went into the studio. It's always great to be in the presence of a superstar, you know?
You haven't been seen this studio since Nathan Murphy left us. Bloody hell. I tell you, I'm still carrying that one. Lads, as I said, well, as Keith being a former Saint, good to have you here, because we will be looking ahead to our live match on Friday evening, which is St. Patrick's Athletic versus Dundalk. That should be a cracker of a game. We will be coming to that shortly. There has been a cup upset as well and a draw for the next round to discuss. But look, lads, I was at Dalymount Park last night, so I said we might as well mention this. Shamrock Rovers as well in Europe this week. Plenty of things to talk around there. And we've got Shelburne and Derry City playing this evening as we record. So we won't touch too much on those games. Maybe chat about them next week. But look, you know, last European fixture at the great Dalymount Park. We're waiting for it to be knocked down, redeveloped. So last night was the final European fixture, because if Bohemians do advance, they will be playing at a different venue, depending on, I suppose, who they play, either Besiktas or Michelin. But they've got a lot of work to do, Vinny. But that aside, what a way to mark that historic night. A last-minute winner for Ross Tierney, and boy, oh boy, what a winner it was.
Yeah, it was a brilliant moment. And I don't know whether the two lads listened, but at times... and you do defend them sometimes, Steve, don't you? Because at times I've been critical of the two boys that scored last night. And I keep saying, I'm not being critical of them. What I often say about them is, for balls to go to the next level, Ross Tierney and James Taylor have to go up another level. And Tierney's has gone up and down in his form, I think, over the last year for different reasons. Some of that, in my view, was playing out of position at times. But the two of them stood up, and to go back even to the first goal, James Taylor's goal, Devoy gets a few plaudits for it. It's a brilliant pass, but it's movement. He pointed just before it was laid into him, and it is an outstanding finish. And for balls to go to the next level, whether that's competing for a league title or getting to at least a third round in Europe, the two of them in particular, because Devoy has been doing it all for the last couple of years, two of them add goals to the game. Balls are a serious side, and as you said, it looked like a wonderful occasion last night. Dalymount is steeped in history. I've seen years ago, seen the Republic of Ireland playing there. I've seen a huge amount of 21s play there when I was younger. And if that's one of the last big nights of that old venue, I'd be really happy with it. It was brilliant for them.
Yeah, it was. Now look, they went 1-0 down. They had to come back with the two goals. As you said, James Taylor's finish, absolutely brilliant, especially the ball coming behind him like that and to hit it for his touch. But look, they're a good side, Balkany, Keith. You know, even doing my research before the commentary on the game last night, you could see there was a couple of players there, really good pedigree, the likes of Giovanni. He's been with Ajax, went back to Brazil, then comes back to Europe to play for Balkany. Couple of other players there, Kuch as well, who's the captain. He plays for Montenegro internationally. They had a Bosnian international as well. So, like, they're a quality side, and I suppose you would expect Balkany, I'm sure Balcani would be expecting to get the job done when they take it back to their home venue. But just to get that one goal lead to bring it over there, it does give Bohemians a little bit of hope there.
It does give them hope. I'm sure Balcani will be licking their lips because of the home advantage. They would have felt Bo's power, so to speak, in the first leg, and they might be weighing it all up and thinking, yeah, I think Balcani will be relishing it. But I also think Bo's, with the goal advantage, they will know there's improvement to be made, especially defensively. I mean, when Hickey gives away the penalty, I think he can defend an awful lot better than that. I mean, for such a big man, he can move his feet quicker than that. He should move his feet quicker. And once the player gets to the other side, he should just, you know, hands up, don't go near them. So I think there's a little bit of improvement to be done defensively. And I think Bowes will fancy getting on the score sheet again. And if they do that, you really are throwing the gauntlet down to Balcani. But again, I emphasise, if they defend better, Bowes, they have a much better chance in the second leg of progressing. If they're a bit part in terms of their defence and okay attacking, they could come unstuck. But if they're ruthless at the top end and better in their defensive actions, I think they have half a chance there. And I think Bowes will be licking their lips here. As much as Balcani will fancy it, I think Bowes will as well.
Yeah, because it's a huge carrot when you think it's either Beşiktaş or Michelin waiting in the next round. Vinny, I think, look, you've got experience, Vinny, both as an assistant, as a manager yourself, going to Europe and playing the kind of football that you need to play to win these ties. And it was interesting, I don't hear you alongside me in the commentary box last night, and you could tell there was parts of the game where some supporters getting a little bit impatient, and we were kind of making the point in commentary that you got to be really patient in these games. And there's times maybe Bohemians are knocking the ball around at the back. And this is something I think why Shamrock Rovers have been so successful in Europe, is they know how to play these ties. They know how to be patient. But those moments where a team has the ball in their own defensive third and you can tell that they're trying to hold on to possession because they're trying to move the opposition team around to create spaces, to maybe break up the lines, that kind of thing. Can you maybe kind of give us a bit of information on that yourself, Vinny, from your own experience?
Yeah, I think there's two things. One is the European games are so much different than league football. They're just completely different. And even when you play like the team they knocked out last week or whatever, Rovers playing teams from Malta, they're just different. It's very hard to explain. And you're generally playing against a team that's successful. That's why they're in Europe. So they have a winning mentality. I think there's a balance with that, Steve. I know the point because I listened a bit to you and on last night. I think there's a balance with that in terms of, you've got to be careful at home that you don't lose the tie. You can lose the tie at home. And what I mean by that is, when balls go away, history of these ties in the last 25 years tells you the second leg is so difficult for Irish teams. It's like these teams travel. They look average enough. They look like there's not a lot in between Balcani and balls. And all of a sudden you go away and they go up two or three levels. Another week into the season, particularly those that are out summer. So you can't lose the tie at home, and you must be brave at home. And I'm not suggesting Bowes weren't, but the point I'm making is I can understand why fans want you to go more than a goal ahead going into the away games, because it's so, so difficult over there. But that said, they're different games. They're very tactical. You've got to be careful. You've got to choose your moments, and you can't give away silly goals. Key touched on it. I thought the goal was really disappointing for Bowes to give away, because I think ultimately that hurt them in the second leg. So it's finding that balance. And Europe only comes around once a year. Sometimes it comes around, if you're lucky, two or three or four times in your career. So that's why I'd rather he had a bit more of a go yesterday, Steve. I'd be slightly different opinion than you and Owen, because yeah, you might get the chance again, and you've got to have more than a one goal lead sometimes going away. Hopefully that's enough for them, please God.
Yeah, like what was your kind of, like, I think Reynolds, actually his substitutions were good last night, because, you know, the lads he brought off, it turned out that the timing was good. They all made an impact off the bench. Was it more so in the first half maybe that you had an issue with the way things were going for Bohemians?
Yeah, because you're at home, and I think, and by the way, I've made this, I remember we played Carabag at home, and in the first leg, and they took the lead, and we ultimately at home and equalised against them late. But that's one of them games that sticks in my memory, because we showed them too much respect at home. Away from home, they were a class side. They were getting the Champions League regularly. But in Oriel, they were there to be beaten. And we didn't. We drew with them. We ended up going out by 2 goals away from home, a really difficult night. So we missed the opportunity at home. And I hope this reminds me of the same thing. But you're right to touch on the substitutions. Like James Taylor came on and they ended up with Colin Whelan and him. And that's the braveness you're talking about. Now, if you concede 2 or 3, Reynolds is getting hammered as well for the other side, if I get it. I'm just making the point that he may have lost the tie by only winning 2-1 potentially. I hope that's not the case. Mm. But I hope you don't live to regret that sort of opening 45, 60 minutes.
Yeah, no, I get you. Keith, as a player, like you did play in European ties with Pats. How did you find it as a player when you were kind of the difference between going from league football to those European nights?
That's chalk and cheese. To be honest with you, Steve, I was in a fairly dark place. I think people know this. Anybody who knows my story will know. At Pats, I wasn't in a great place. But when Europe came rolling around, I mean, probably 6 weeks out, people start talking about Europe and, you know, the media start getting more and more involved. At Pats, we were training out in the Alsa at the time, and you'd come in to train and the media would be there. They'd want the interviews and you'd start getting little snippets of the team you're playing against, and, you know, the itinerary starts filtering through of when you're flying and this, that and the other. And it just, that big game feel just comes and you're training in the build up to it and everybody's bang on it and you think, okay, this has a proper feel about it all of a sudden. And I remember we went to we played Minsk away and we came out. I didn't know an awful lot about Minsk at the time. We went over there and we trained on the pitch and it was this lovely stadium, like a bowl feel, very intimidating. And I could see a couple of lads going into themselves and thinking, oh, well, this is like a 40,000-seater stadium. They must be better than us, you know. And people are saying they expect Minsk to beat us. And before we went down, before the game, we warmed up and we were standing in the tunnel. And I looked around and I just felt a couple of people were starting to go into their shells. And I thought, lads, this is 11v11. This isn't Real Madrid. This is FC Minsk. Let's go and have a pop off them. And like Vinny says, we actually did really, really well. We ended up drawing 1-1 the away leg, and I think Minsk beat us 1-0 in Inchicore to eventually win the tie. But like Vinny says, I felt Pats were not on the front foot. We didn't have an awful lot of the ball, but when we won it, we tried to horse them, and that was the main thing. And I thought we kept the tempo really high. And yeah, I think a lot of the Irish clubs, when Europe rolls around, or is, you know, 1 month, 6 weeks, 8 weeks out, the eye just starts to go to it because it has that real big game feel.
Yeah. Stephen Bradley obviously is an expert in European football at this stage, Vinny, and he's had great success with that Shamrock Rovers team. It was interesting listening to his post-match after their 2-0 defeat in Yerevan against Ararat. Excuse me. He's used a word that he's used a few times this season after matches, and it was sloppy. That's coming up quite a bit. Now, I don't know, what did you make of Ararat? What did you make of the Rovers' performance?
Well, actually, I think before I answer that, I think when you think of Rovers, just because Rovers keep the ball a lot in Europe, they play a different way. And so that's probably the difference. So you've got to change your style in Europe, whether it's balls, shells, dairy, you've got to change your style a little bit. You've got to protect that ball because at times... And in Europe, sometimes you think you're in a game. And it seems to be all of these teams around their levels in Conference 1, 2, Europa League 1 and 2, they all seem to have one or two Brazilians that come from nowhere. And when you think you're in a game, and Keith played Europe, I never played, only coached, well, I did, actually. But anyway, wasn't that good. But what they do is you think you're in a game, Keith, and all of a sudden it's just one... A quick 1-2 and they're in behind you and they're 1-0 down, you're going, I thought we were in this game. And the lads are looking at each other, these aren't that good. Yeah, no, but they've just done you with bam, bam, bam sharpness. And obviously Keith went and played at a higher level, so we know what I'm talking about. But that's what we're not used to as League of Ireland players. And the more exposure we get to that, people like Rovers, they're getting used to it. And what you're seeing with the goals Rovers are conceding, or you'll see over these games, Derry getting done as well, what he thought you were in a tie and then ultimately getting done, is they're up at another level. And as much as you think you're in it, you get done because mentally it switched off for a split second. And Rovers have switched off mentally against a team that are probably another level above what they play against domestically. But Rovers are good enough to get something out of that. But they have to be, it has to be a magical night in Tala for that to happen. It has to be close to sold out. They have to make a hostile, and the players have to just take the shackles off and go for it. Now, Rovers will still play that controlled way, but they just have to go for it, and things have to go their way. But they've given themselves a mountain to climb, and you're right. They've been sloppy at times this year, and have been punished by a couple of teams.
Yeah, because I thought Rovers were a better side than Ararat. Myself and Ben Sines were watching it in the studio here on the night, and I definitely thought that Rovers looked like the better quality side. And it is just that I'd say Stephen Bradley must be, you know, banging his head off the table, Keith, because I said this isn't the first time this season. He knows that his players can do better. I just want what is causing the sloppiness? I know we can only speculate now because we're not in the dressing room there with them.
We can only speculate, but like Vinny, I think it's because Rovers are so comfortable domestically that, you know, you make a handful of mistakes in a League of Ireland game, possibly you don't get punished to the extent that you will in Europe. And even the fourth goal, when Grace gives it away, you can say, okay, Lee Grace is really poor in terms of the back pass, but you can feel the door closing. The fourth centre-half has it. I think then he gives it into Pico. You can feel the press getting tight. Then he gives it to Grace. You can feel the press getting tighter. That could have went at any time. Mm. And I don't know. Like Shamrock Rovers over the last couple of years under Stephen Bradley have had this evolution in Europe where they're not making those mistakes. When they go away from home, they're playing a different style of football, because Shamrock Rovers have been an unbelievable team within the League of Ireland, but in terms of stepping onto the European stage, they're not going to bop teams for 90 minutes. There's going to be a different way to go about it. And every now and then you've got to bail out. If it's getting tight, just chip one into the channel, because you're away from home and you don't want to play yourself out of the tie. And I'm sure Stephen Bradley will be saying those individual errors that cost us against Ararat, maybe they can be eradicated in the second leg. They can be ruthless at the top end of the park. And even in the dying embers, was it Afolabi went through and lobbed the goalkeeper? That should really hit the back of the net. And 2-1 has a totally different feel to 2-0. So I think Stephen Bradley, just like Bowes, will be licking their lips thinking, we will improve. We will be an awful lot better in this second leg. And as I say, if they eradicate those mistakes and don't lose the ball in bad areas and they're ruthless at the top end, like Vinny says, if Tallaght is sold out and it's bouncing, it could be another special European night. And I hope Shamrock Rovers fans and League of Ireland fans in general aren't just looking and going, oh, Rovers will be okay. They'll get group stage football. We need to get behind them and give them a little push to get over the line if possible here, because they've been outstanding and hopefully they can do it again.
Yeah, I'm kind
of... But Steve-O, do you know what? Before I forget to make this point, do you know what? I go back to 2004, believe it or not. Remember Shells played Deportivo La Coruña? Right? So I was going to mention some people's names, so I'll slag myself instead. Stewie Bourne was up against, and people like that. That was a great Shells team. When they went up against them, they were playing Vinnie Peart 2 weeks before that, who had a job and was a part-time semi-professional footballer. And then he was marking a fella that played for Real Madrid, Victor, who scored twice against them. But that's the challenge us League of Ireland clubs have. And like that's the easiest way explains Keith's point, where we need to improve the standards. And we're getting there, and Europe has been really good for us. But we need teams breaking that ceiling like we do in the Conference League last year. So the more we break that ceiling, the more we raise the standard of the league, then we'll start seeing 2 and 3 teams getting into a conference at least, and maybe someone breaking the Europa League. And it looks like the most likely to do that over time will be Shamrock Rovers. So it's about standards. It's about levels. There's levels to football. And sometimes League of Ireland people don't like hearing that. We think, well, he's playing really well, he should be in the Ireland team. But there's levels to football, and Europe is where you see the levels. That's why, by hook or by crook, I go and watch as many European games in this country as I can, because by and large, teams are up levels.
Sorry, Steve, do you know one of the things I loved about European football is, even when I was playing in the League of Ireland with Pats in 2015 or whatever it was, the amount of information you get about the opposition, this fella likes to do that. For instance, if I'm up against Greg Bulger, everybody within the League of Ireland knows everything about Greg Bulger. So the amount of stats, he likes to do this, he'll do that, Keith, X, Y, or Z. Then you go into Europe, you see the name on the sheet, you get told he's left-footed and Brazilian, but you don't know an awful lot about him. Mm. And you go flying into a tackle and then he nutmegs and you think, oh, okay, this boy's a player. And all of a sudden you're thinking, I need to start solving problems on the fly here. And that doesn't really happen in modern day football anymore. I know the World Cup with the four quarters, managers had a much, much bigger input and coaches much bigger input. But even now in European games, you see people looking at the bench and going, he's not where you said he was going to be, or he's not the player that you said he was on paper. It's all being able to work on the fly. And that's why I love watching European games, because a lot of players get some type of information, but information on paper and information downloading in your brain when people are doing it is totally different. So I love seeing how players react on the fly in Europe.
Yeah, it's funny.
What about the second leg game? Oh, second leg, Keith. You know, when, say, you were told the right back's not that quick and you're up against him with the left back, and then second leg, you've worked him out and you know a little bit more, well, he can only cut me off here. So the second leg must have been huge in those European games as a player.
Yeah, the second legs were always absolutely huge because you've had a little feel of it, haven't you? You've felt each other out. Both people know what they're good at and what they're bad at. And I think when we played against Minsk in the first leg, I did quite well away. I think we played two sixes and we bogged down the pitch quite well. Minsk didn't have too many opportunities. But then in the second game, they put the two strikers didn't go up against the centre-halves. They went to the right and to the left of me. So I'm in the middle of the pitch with a player 10 yards to the right, 10 yards to the left, and I'm just in no man's land thinking, if I go left, he's passed right. If I go right, he'll pass left. So what I did was get one of the centre midfielders to drop low with me again so we could do that. But then they have piss position and you're thinking, this is like a game of chess, and you're trying to just figure things out on the fly and work from there. And do you know the thing that breaks my heart? We got undone by a set piece then.
Yeah.
I was doing the front post area and a player ran about 5 yards beyond me. So yeah. I tracked him to a certain extent and thought, I leave him now, flicked it on, back post header. And yeah. I blame Bermo blame me. Liam Buckley blamed me. So I think I got the sharp end of it. But I love it. I love the tactical battle and having to figure it all out yourself.
I think there was a bit of that with Harry Vaughan last night when he came on. The fact that he can go left, he can go right. And that really kind of, I think that really threw the Balcani defence. There's one other thing, Vinny, I wanted to throw at you as well, because this new rule with the 60 seconds for the injured players going off, I think managers need to start using this as a big advantage in a game. Whereas, you know, I know it's only 60 seconds, but you can do so much in 60 seconds where if you've got a man advantage, I think managers need to, if they're not, they might be doing it already and I just haven't copped it, but they need to have a plan in place, I think, for when they get an injury, their player's off for 60 seconds, what are we going to do with the extra man? Because you can really punish a team there.
Yeah, I think you've got to be brave and just go. It all depends on the game and what the score is and stuff like that. But I think you've got to come up with an overload somewhere and be a little bit braver. Whether that's having a, say you're playing with a 10 and one number 9, leaving the two of them up front and just going direct and creating chaos. And look, there's an old saying, chaos creates opportunity. And I think it's a matter of time before someone sees that. But you'll probably see it in the Premiership first, and it will filter its way down, where somebody goes off injured and all of a sudden the likes of a Brentford now are tuned into that, and they end up a four up front and it goes back to the goalkeeper and it is launched. So I think you'd start seeing that. We're only learning this rule and we're only seeing it work itself out now as we go along.
Yeah, now tonight...
And that's called the balls rule, isn't it? Because instead of your goalkeeper going down injured. Is that right, Steve-O, yeah?
Well, no comment, Vinny. I got enough trouble last week in Gibraltar over some of the... Anyway, I'm only joking. Listen, tonight, Derry City away to Rijeka. That's a really tough match. They've got a couple of good internationals in that Rijeka side. And Shelburne at home to Calliou. Look, we won't go too heavy on those games. Maybe come back to them next week. But, Vinny... it's a big night for John Russell because, as we know, his first match in charge, he goes back to that, place he probably never wants to go back to for another long time, down to Mount Hawk Park to play Kerry. They get themselves back into the match to take to extra time with that late equaliser, taking the penalty kicks. Kerry failed to convert their first two, and you're thinking, Shelburne, home and hosed. And then, would you look what happens? Like, it must be... Now, I suppose John Russell won't come under too much criticism for that. It's his first game. He's only in the door. But it's a real sucker punch for Shelburne, where you think that's another avenue to a trophy and then possibly to Europe closed down from the season.
Oh, I thought it was a big blow for him. We actually touched on it last week in the podcast about, or reminded the two lads that the last time he was down there, he was beaten. It's probably the worst place he probably wanted to go. But... I think we all want Don to do well. I said it last week, I don't think anyone I've ever heard has a bad word to say for him. But there's no guarantees of it. And football clubs are mad. They're just mad in terms of you either belong in a club or you don't. And yes, I know you still have to be a good manager, but just sometimes your face either fits and it works for you. And I used it last week, I think it's a great example of it, off the fly last week. You know, you think of Kenny, in the last 25 years, Kenny and Fenlon have been two absolutely top-class managers, huge amount of success. Trevor Crawley's an outstanding coach, we all know that, and that's what we all hear. And the three of them failed at Rovers, and Stephen Bradley, who was unheralded, went in and has been better than them all. And Rovers have probably never had a better manager. So what's my point? My point is, we don't know whether it's going to work out for John. It feels like he's a great bunch of players. We like the way he plays football. It feels like it's set up for him to be successful. Let's hope it is. But there's no guarantees of it. And that's just football for no reason. That's things work out sometimes and don't work out other times.
Yeah, the squad, though, is shrinking in the last couple of weeks. And losing Harry Wood, Keith, like that's... You know, that's he's the game changer. He's pulled games out of the fire this season alone for Shelburne. What can you kind of expect to see, do you think, with John Russell and his recruitment drive now over the next couple of weeks? What's he going to have to look at, do you reckon?
John is obviously a clever bloke, obviously the manager of Sligo. He would have had little whiffs that maybe Harry was moving on before he took the Shelburne job. So I don't think it would have come as a complete surprise. I haven't got my finger on the pulse of what's going on at Shelburne, but given how well Harry has played over the last couple of years, it's not a surprise to me. So I can't imagine it's a surprise to many within the building at Shelburne. The one thing I would love to know, Vinny would know an awful lot more about this than me, which way does John Russell go about it now? Because I remember having a chat with him at Sligo, and I'm talking about the style of play they have at Sligo, is how they attract players to come here, prove them as players, and then maybe go back to their parent clubs. At Shelburne, it's about winning at the here and now. So does he now think, well, I want to play total football like I did at Sligo, or, you know, some sort of version of that? Or does he go a little bit more attritional and think, well, I can't get my point across on the training ground in such a short period of time, so I'm going to give the lads the basics and then we'll go from there and I'll go little bit by little bit? Or does he go straight in at the deep end and say, no, this is my tactics, get used to them from now? You know, which way, what would be the best way to go about it, Vinny? What would you do if you were in John's shoes?
I'll answer it by throwing it back to you. Imagine being a player, Keith, right, that's played with Shelburne. And you've been in that situation probably where people have lost their jobs because things haven't gone well. And a lot of them managers come in, you would experience where, oh, we're conceding too many goals, and they just do defensive sessions for the first couple of weeks. So that's easy to do, defensive sessions. But I think, and I don't know how you'd react to it, so what my view would be, to go in there and tell them they're all brilliant, and tell them all great, and you still have to do your bit of coaching. Don't get me wrong, you've got to subtly change things, and I'm not talking about go in and be Jack the Lad, but I'm saying, tell it's Jarvis now. Tell him he's brilliant. Tell Meepo he's brilliant. Tell Daniel Kelly, look, you've had a brilliant season. People are paying into what you're going to excite us. Imagine I came into a dressing room and said that to you, Keith, as opposed to, here's a video of the last 10 weeks of all your mistakes, and this is how you get better. And I think it needs someone to come in and put a smile back on the whole football club, Keith. And over time, John has to take his time, and over time, get his own stamp on him. But for now, just get Barrett back playing to his best, keeping Katie fit, getting Cairn McElroy back into the team, Henry Francis, and just held them up. They are out. Like, they're a brilliant team. And I don't know what you think of what I've just said, but I think I'd get the best out of you as a coach by telling you how bloody good you are. I think O'Brien and Duffer changed people's lives in Shelbourne. They've done a brilliant job, but they were hard taskmasters, both of them, where the players are probably shoulders are down a little bit. You've got to lift them up. I don't know what you think of that, but that's my approach and that's my advice on.
I think that's sound advice. To be honest, I think tactics come secondary to me in terms of everything. If you can motivate a dressing room and get players on side and get them wanting to work, I think you're on to a winner. And then, like you say, John can start to implement these little tactics bit by bit. But I think getting players on side, lifting those shoulders and getting people wanting, and I'm not saying they don't want to go into work, but, you know, just getting out of bed and going, I can't wait to go to training. I mean, when you have that type of dressing room and that feel, it's an awful lot easier for everybody. But at the minute, from the outside looking in, sometimes it looks like a little bit of a slog at Shelbourne.
Yeah, and look, he's got, you know, the people will be able to make comparisons with Waterford, because you look at how Graham Coughlin's gone in there, and I'd say he's done a bit of that, Finney, what you were saying about going in and making players feel good about themselves again. But the one thing that was being hammered home, you can tell from his post-match interviews, is that we're going to work hard here. There's going to be a lot of hard work. I wonder if that's the approach that John Russell takes as well, because Shelbourne have to make up a big gap there. There's 34 points between themselves and St. Patrick's Athletic. It's 34 points up to 42, 8 points between them. Just above them are Dundalk. They've all played the same amount of games, 24 matches. And Pats and Dundalk both have a chance to put some daylight between themselves and Shelbourne on Friday night. It's interesting, actually, look at the league table. Pats on 42 points, Dundalk on 35, Pats plus 19 goal difference, Dundalk just plus 2. And if they're going to score goals, well, they've certainly been dealt a bit of a blow, losing Owen Kenny and now Bemi Arubi, Vinny, but they have signed this week. What's going on there, do you think? How does Ciarán Kilduff kind of maintain this brilliant start to the season that he's had with his team?
I think this is his fourth big test. I think if you remember the way Kenny, Arubi and Horgan played, it was very narrow as a tree. They're almost little flicks around the corner. And at different stages, Horgan in particular would give them width on the left wing. But the three of them were turning up in different areas. Arubi told up play. Remember, Steve, our scouting department on this podcast said Arubi is ripe for a League One, League Two. And if he can hit it off over there, they'd be thinking we can sell him to a championship club. He holds the ball up brilliantly. He scores goals. He attacks the front post. He's a big, strong boy. He is set up perfectly, as we said in our scouting department on this podcast about him. And he's been brilliant. And you have to congratulate the young lad for it. Like, he's a young boy, done really well in the fourth division, done well in the Premier, and he's kept his chance. But this is the fourth test for Kilduff, because he's got to play a different way. So if McDaid comes into the team, McDaid's not going to play the way Kenny did, narrow, running in. McDaid wants to be out wide, hugging, putting chalk on his boots. So they've got to come up with a different way. And we're going to see a little bit of that. I mean, they tried some things. Horgan was really narrow off Arubi in the draw of the match we did a couple of weeks ago. Tian played really, really well. He's a good footballer, him. So how did he get, you know, is it Tian, Horgan and one other? How did he get combination together? Does he change his shape a little bit and go to a more of a 4-4-2? So it's going to be interesting to see what he does. But to be fair to Killers, he's passed every test that has come his way. I think it was Keith said I've heard it on the so often that Dundalk are like everyone's second favourite team because of the way they play, and it's that front-foot football, and it's front foot, what does that mean? They go and get after people. It's brilliant to see. So we've got to come up with a way now. And to be fair to the club, finances there aren't brilliant. So they've got to take baby steps. And when it's on to cash in for someone, they just have to do it, unfortunately.
3 goals and 5 assists with Enfield Town in 12 appearances. Keane Dillon, the new Dundalk signing. Started out with Shamrock Rovers, moved over to Queen's Park Rangers. He had a couple of loan spells with various clubs. He's played under 21 football for the Republic of Ireland. But a centre forward, Keith, he's going to have to hit the ground running. I wonder, will he play any part in this match, St Patrick's Athletic away in Inchicore Friday night?
Yeah, I'm not too sure. We'll see how he goes. But obviously losing Arubi and Kenny is two massive, massive blows. You're taking so much goals and creativity and a target man and a dribbler. You're taking an awful lot of attributes and, you know, everything else out of the team. I agree with Vinny. I think Tian is a really, really good player. Still very young, still a little bit raw. But I think Kieran Kilduff, you know, he just needs to keep telling the players they're 14 points clear of ninth place.
Yeah.
That was the remit at the start of the season, stay in the league. And I know they've been up and flirting with Europe, and, you know, us in the media are going to say, can they get into Europe? Because we'll always expect that next step or want that next step. But staying in the league is the remit. And the way they've done it, Stephen, has been absolutely sensational. Vinny said it, on the front foot. They get after teams. They press them with so much intensity that they harass mistakes out of the opposition. And I've really enjoyed it. Daryl Horgan, how much has he got left at the start of the season was the question for me. Got buckets left, absolute buckets. The way he moves and manipulates the ball, his delivery from set pieces and from open play has been sensational. And even Tyreek Wilson chipping in with four goals. I've liked an awful lot of Dundalk, and whenever I'm handed a Dundalk game, I'm delighted. Because like Vinny says, I do love to watch them play. Having said that, I actually fancy St. Pat's. I think they will beat Dundalk. There's so much I like about St. Pat's. Defensively, so strong. The best defence in the league. Only conceded the 20 goals in 24 games. At the top end of the park, I'm willing to say that they're very, very close to being one of the best teams. With Keane Levy is a different player since he got his Ireland cap. Aidan Keane, we all know how prolific he can be when he's on it. And Edmondson has scored 9 goals already this season. So he's chipped in with his fair amount. With the defence, Redmond, Brown, Hoare, Turner, very, very solid. The 6 defeats that Pats have had this season, though, Steele, they lost to Shamrock Rovers 2-0. Didn't get on the score sheet. Lost to Dundalk 2-0. Didn't get on the score sheet. Lost to Shamrock Rovers again. Failed to get on the score sheet. The same with Shelbourne. The same with Rovers again. And the same with Bowes. So those 6 games that they've lost, they haven't managed to get on the score sheet at all. And when you think they've scored 39 goals this season in the top flight, they're only one off Shamrock Rovers and Bowes, who have the best attack. If they chip in those big, big games where you rely on your players to score goals, you rely on the ones, your Ramal Parmas, your Aidan Keane, is the Keane Levy's of this world, if they're not turning up in the big games, you're never going to get anywhere close to Shamrock Rovers. And I say all that and it sounds a little bit negative, and I always finish with St. Pat's have been brilliant. I'm really enjoying them. I think they're getting closer. I think they're bridging the gap. But do I think they're going to go anywhere near of north of Shamrock Rovers? No. I think they'll be the best of the rest, but I don't think that is a race.
But Keith, they've played 24 games and 50% of them they haven't won. Exactly. You can't win a league with that. They need to look in the mirror. They might like the criticism come their way. If you don't win 50% of your games, I know it's a competitive league, I get that. You're not winning any league title.
Is there still an element, though, Vinny, of Stephen Kenny still constructing this squad? Like, hasn't been there a really long time, that he still maybe needed another transfer window just to get maybe a couple of more players that are suited to the way he wants to play?
Of course there is. Yeah. Of course there is. And how long are I'm not going to go on that rant again, but how long are Roberts going to be weak for? How long before the Corey O'Sullivans have 200 league appearances and 4 league medals and they're replacing the Lopez and the Graces and the Clearys? So the opportunity knocks, and this is I think they've missed an opportunity this season. Stephen's close and won't be long off 2 years at the club. So there's people lost their jobs there by getting into Europe. They didn't get Europe last year. I'm not suggesting he should. There's people lost their jobs there. There's people lost their jobs that won an FAI Cup there. I'm sure they will be shouting at us saying, what you mean it's only 2 years in? Look, I agree with Keith. I think they're very, very close. But there's something wrong if you're not winning 50% of your football matches and we've played 24 games. I think part of it is in one sense, what makes them brilliant is Keen Levy playing narrow off the right with James Brown bombing on ahead of him. But I also think that leaves them a little bit vulnerable at different stages. So Redmond is vulnerable down that right channel at times. And I know the defensive record's really good. And then John Hoare is playing as the quarterback in the back three. And I think I might have mentioned this before, but that's what Paddy Barrett has done brilliantly for a few years. Sean has different attributes. So they're not as flowing as they can be from when they're back three. They have a back three when they have the ball. So you'll find Redmond as a right back and Turner as a left back and John Hoare in the middle of the three. And it's not. And then you've got Lennon looking for it as well. And it feels like Keane is a really good player, but he's in half a position. He's playing 10 and he's dropping. And I just think there needs to be a bit more from them tactically to go and turn those 50% of games not winning into 3 or 4 more wins. And then it's acceptable. So it's a big game for them this week. And it sounds like I'm being negative on them, but I do love watching them. The way Albacete cuts in on his right, whips in great crosses. Edmondson, Keane are good players. Keane Levy's brilliant to watch. Brilliant to watch. And actually, I'm saying that's a negative. Don't go on the other way. But it's brilliant when Keane Levy picks up the ball and he's like Mark Overmars and he just takes off. Brilliant. I love him. But Jesus, lads, sort yourselves out, Pats. Will you? And give us a title, guys.
Yeah, like I think it is a massive game. It's the last game in hand in the table for Pats. There'll be 11 on 25 matches played with Rovers after this one and with Bohemians just ahead of them. So like the 42 points are on now. If they get the win, they're up to 45, just 5 points off Shamrock Rovers. Is there still a two-horse race, three-horse race, Keith? What way do you view that title race at the moment?
I'd love to sit here and say I'm convinced that Pats will beat Dundalk and they will go on a bit of a run and they will get close to Shamrock Rovers. Pats having no European football at the start of the season, I was thinking maybe that could be some sort of positive. They could have legs in the middle of the season and run all over teams. I expect St. Pat's to beat Dundalk, but then the following week I don't expect them to win. You know, it's just that word consistency. It's very up and down. But like Vinny says, I think this is a bigger game than it looks on paper, because while Pat's competition is in Europe and, you know, they possibly have their eye on one other thing, you've got to go and start making hay and start getting close to Shamrock Rovers. If they're going to be a little bit iffy, if Bowes are going to be a little bit iffy over the next, you know, week, 2 weeks, whatever it is, Pats have got to make them pay. And this game in hand is absolutely huge. It starts with 3 points, but consistency throughout the league has been something that I don't think even Shamrock Rovers can claim to have had so far.
Yeah, and lo and behold, the draw made for the FAI Cup third round. And who do Pats draw at Inchicore? Only Shamrock Rovers, Vinny.
Oh, what a draw. You know what? I spent close on about 20% of my life in Stephen Kenny's company, probably, you know, that way between player for years and coach and different things. I can imagine his reaction.
Yeah.
And imagine his reaction.
Like, well, tell us, what do you think it was?
I can't. Because we've got rid of the bad language off this podcast. But there's another part of the relish. I mean, if they win it, you know what I mean? You're knocking out the favourites and Pats become the red hot favourites to win the competition. But he'd have been bullying with that draw. And it's a tough, tough draw for Pats. I mean, to be honest with you, and he won't like us saying it, don't know that Keith Grees or not, I think that tie puts a bit of pressure on Pats. Yeah. I think losing that, not really being in a title race means, you know what, how long is this going to go on for where we're a nearly club, you know?
Okay, it is an interesting few weeks because they got the Dundalk match at home on Friday night. That will be live on Off the Ball from 7 o'clock this Friday. Then they've got a home match against Derry City, which might be the worst time to play Derry with them doing a bit of travelling and otherwise with Europe. And then it's away to Shelburne, Dublin Derby on the 7th of August before Pats welcome Shamrock Rovers to Inchicore for that FAI Cup tie. And look, maybe it's not a bad time to get Rovers either, because Rovers will have those European distractions going on. But you know, it says it just, I suppose, emphasises the point more that, that Pats need to start winning these big, big games to really get themselves a good finish to the season. What else have we got at the weekend? Of course, there's two matches on Saturday night, 5 o'clock, Galway United against Waterford, and then Sligo Rovers entertaining Drogheda United. It's the last game at Pearce Stadium for Galway United. And for those two clubs as well, Galway and Sligo Rovers, Drogheda giving themselves a bit of breathing space in that relegation scrap. But listen, lads, that's really all we have time for this week. Vinny, I hope you're practising your scales, warming up that voice, getting ready for your sing-song with Brian Kerr at the Go Loud Lounge for the live LOI pod. Well,
there will be two music snobs down there, you and Brian Kerr. Who do you think is know-it-all when it comes to music?
Yeah.
If it's one of them. If people like me have heard of the band, you'll stop liking them. That's the way he's gone.
I can't wait. It's going to be great crack. We might have a couple of special guests along the way as well. Are you a big music fan, Keith? Were you over the years?
I'm all over the shop. I'm eclectic. Yeah. I can be heavy metal to 80s to to speed garage to you were a bit ska, aren't you?
I love a bit of ska. I like my Jamaican music. I'm into everything as well. Were you a music man in the dressing room?
I was at Blackburn, because I think I was so young that I was the one who was all over the technology. You know, the iPod was just coming out. And I think
the one for the teenagers
I think the lads were thinking we're not getting involved, and they just all gave me songs. Kings of Leon was very popular, house music and that, but because I was either a sub or I was not used, I was in the squad but didn't make the bench, I would be generally tasked with being the DJ at Blackburn. Yeah.
We might be missing a trick here, we're all together now. We should maybe get you on the decks.
It was a playlist and press play and walked out of the room, and thankfully Elhadj Diouf came in and took it off me then. And
really, yeah.
Oh, that started a couple of fights in the dressing room. He's,
no way.
Yeah, he had some strange music taste, Elhadj. Strange character, to be honest. Yeah, yeah, summed up with his music taste. Like a lot of Akon.
You'd have neighbours in that, Keith, would you? Was Boyzone, was he around your area?
Yeah, Stephen Gailey was from Sherry Street as well. I still see the family all the time, but Boyzone wasn't really my thing. My sisters were mad into them and the Backstreet Boys, but it wasn't really me.
Now, there are two bands I love. Backstreet Boys.
I knew he was going to say this. Yeah. Right, lads, it's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you for listening. We will be back with you next week for another LOI pod here in Off the Ball. Don't forget, Friday night, 7 o'clock, we'll have live and exclusive national radio commentary of St. Patrick's Athletic at home to Dundalk, and we'll have an LOI late night. Jump onto the X platform, look for Off the Ball, and you can, I'm not sure actually, do we have one on Friday, Davis? I wasn't too sure. Yeah, we might too. Jump on X anyway and have a look at Off the Ball, because you get all the post-match interviews with the managers, and then, of course, the LOI wrap-up on Saturday morning with Ross Flanagan. He'll have all the post-match reaction as well from that, and maybe from some of the European games. But look, best of luck to all the Irish clubs in Europe over the next week, and we'll chat about it more. We'll chat to you then. Take care.
Cheers, man.
The LOI Pod on Off the Ball. Catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off the Ball all season.